This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. It's Tuesday, the 24th of May, 7:06 a.m. I'm Shazana Mukhtar with Philip C. and Tan Chen Li. As we always do, let's recap how global markets closed yesterday.
U.S. down up 2%, the S&P 500 up 1.9%, Nasdaq up 1.6%. A lot of ups in U.S., possibly because of what Biden is signaling, that he's reconsidering the tariff place on China. Asian side, Nikkei up 1%, Hang Seng down 1.2%, Shanghai Composite up marginally at 0.01%, SDI down 0.8%, FBM KLCI down 0.4%.
All right, so mixed signals coming from global markets at the moment. For thoughts on what's moving markets, we have on the line with us Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management. Joe, good morning. Thanks for speaking with us today. Now, U.S. stocks rose considerably overnight. What do you think is driving investor sentiment upwards? And is this bounce sustainable?
Well, I hope it's sustainable, but that's the big question mark. Well, we won't know until tomorrow, but I just think the markets were oversold. So a lot of people came in over the weekend, looked at the numbers, pretty beaten up across the board. A lot of stocks at 52-week lows. So a lot of buyers today, which is nice, but you know, we'll see what happens tomorrow because we still have to deal with inflation, the COVID-19 problem in China, and the war in Europe. So we're not out of the woods just yet.
So, you know, as Chen Li was saying just now, Biden was considering lifting some trade tariffs on China. How much did that actually factor into the market then?
I don't think very much, because if you lift the tariffs on China, that's not going to help inflation right now. I mean, inflation is being driven by rents, wages rising, food prices, you know, just commodities across the board. So, I mean, I hate to say it, it's not even a Band-Aid in terms of like what it can do to help alleviate price pressures here in the United States. So maybe there are some, you know, it's a step in the right direction, so to speak. But we've got a lot of inflationary heavy lifting yet to do here in the U.S.
And there has been less IPO activity in the U.S. this year compared to the last, especially through the use of SPAC. Are SPACs falling out of favor as a mode of listing publicly? And are more companies choosing to go through private funding instead?
I think companies are looking more at the private route. But remember, SPACs were very popular in 2021 when there's just loads of liquidity. So, you know, I mean, Wall Street, you know, ebbs and flows and liquidity matters. So SPACs had their day. I mean, at one point I was going to do a SPAC, but like, you know, I didn't because I didn't have much to offer. But maybe it could have worked. But, you know, when liquidity is tightening now and people are running for cover, people are bear market. So these types of investments aren't going to do well. So it doesn't surprise me that you're seeing less interest in SPACs.
I mean, do we end up envisioning SPACs to just become a niche product in the end? Because we see all these bulge bracket investment banks shun it going forward. Do you foresee in the next 3 to 5 years SPACs just going to become a very niche product?
It could be. I mean, I'm not the specialist in that product, but you know, it does speak to the ingenuity of the financial, you know, system here in the United States in terms of raising capital, trying to get companies launched into the IPO market. So, I mean, there's no better place in the world to raise money and try to start a company than the U.S. And I think SPACs will be part of that, kind of that backdrop in the DNA. But remember, 20 and 21, the liquidity was just flowing, gushing, and that can create its own problems. And the nice thing, you know, a lot of these SPACs have been spanked, so to speak, and you know that's the market self-correcting. So we've seen an orderly correction here through this, you know, kind of close to the bear market. That's important. A lot of people are like upset, getting a little worried, but this has been an orderly decline thus far, and that's very important because that sets us up for a rebound later on.
And if we turn to oil, Joe, I mean, oil prices have definitely recovered from the lows of 2020. They're now hovering about $110 a barrel. I'm wondering where you see oil prices trending in the near to medium term in light of the different factors involved, and how you think the U.S. is going to approach high prices if they remain elevated in the short term.
Well, for the U.S. consumer, you just got a grin or just be growling, Barrett, I should say. But like, you know, it's strategic petroleum reserves being released, but there's no relief here. I just think, you know, demand destruction. So maybe people will travel less. Airline prices are going up to the roof. People might take shorter vacations. So there's a lot of demand destruction out there. But I'm you know, I'll be honest with you. I'm encouraged that oil prices aren't as high as and I think they. I thought they would be higher, given we, you know, we're 3 months into the war now with Russia, Ukraine, what's going on with Europe and, you know, energy. I mean, I'm encouraged that we're at this level, and that's you know, it's kind of like ironic to say that, but a lot of people are still forecasting, you know, 150 is the top, but you know, hopefully we don't have to reach that, because then we're talking recession, not only in the United States, but globally.
I absolutely agree with you, because 6 months ago, we were talking that demand destruction level is at 170. We are far from that level. Mm-hmm. Do you think China's weak demand played into and helped, I think, control prices for oil?
Yeah, no, it's a great point. Yes. The answer is yes, it has. China slowed down dramatically, really since January, February, March and April. The numbers were, you know, kind of off the chart downward, so to speak. Maybe oil gets a little bit of a bid in the second half as China cuts interest rates to try to reflate. But the weakness in China, believe it or not, in some cases has been a blessing. It's been a curse for other companies that want to, you know, sell more iPhones, want to, you know, unclog the bottlenecks with the supply chains. But, you know, in the commodity play, China's weakness has actually kept a lid on prices.
And some economists are predicting that the Eurozone will enter into a recession this year or the next. What are your thoughts on this? Is it something that ECB can help the EU to avoid?
I think it's too late. And the ECB has, you know, basically said that they're going to raise rates in July, which I think is the right policy move. But they're going to move much slower than, say, the Fed in inflation. So some of the numbers coming out of Germany, you know, not too bad. The IFO survey, industrial production hanging in there. But, you know, if Europe doesn't go into recession, it will be very close to one. So they're slowing down. They're in an energy crisis. They need some resolution, obviously, with Ukraine. They need to kind of ramp up the fiscal spending. ECB goes slower. They watch the currency. They went right. We could be at parity in terms of, you know, the euro dollar. There's a lot of U.S. investors ready to go over to, you know, on vacation in Europe, because that wine will be a lot cheaper.
Which then begs the question about, you know, you mentioned this Russian-Ukraine war. It really has become a prolonged affair. Do you think that its impacts on the global economy will dissipate as the war prolongs?
No, I don't think it does, because it cuts so close to, you know, Europe. It cuts close to, like, globalization or deglobalization, democracy versus autocrats. You know, U.S. involvement. So it's not going to dissipate. And that's kind of like it. That's, I think, is the key risk hanging over the global economy is the war in Ukraine. It's not the COVID, China. It's not inflation in the U.S. We know how to deal with those things. The wars are just so unpredictable and unintended consequences. So I think you're right in the sense that, you know, it's a great question, because I don't think it dissipates. It just overhangs the global economy until we get some type of clarity of, like, where we're going. What's the exit ramp for both parties?
Joe, thanks as always for speaking to us. That was Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the U.S. Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, giving us his take on the trends that he sees moving markets, believing that this war in Ukraine is going to hang over us until some resolution is achieved. That could be months, that could be years.
And that specs are getting a spanking.
That's definitely the most memorable part from the conversation.
Very catchy indeed. 7:17 in the morning, we're heading into some messages, and when we come back, we'll discuss takeaways from Malaysia's performance at the SEA Games. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.